Welcome back, everyone, to Frenemies, the podcast where sales and marketing talk. My name is Julia Hartwig, and I'm the head of marketing at Presenter. And today I have the pleasure of welcoming my manager and CEO of Presenter to the podcast. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Julia. I'm so happy to be here. I've heard and listened to your podcast, and being a guest is extra fun.
I'm glad that we agree on that. And actually, why Sarah is joining us today is, of course, because she has a lot of experience in sales and a big background there, but also because Presenter just launched a report that is based on research we did on why the CFO matters and why you should care both in B2B marketing and sales. So that's what we want to talk about today. So to start off with, Sarah, in your experience, how has the role of the CFO in the buying committees and in B2B purchase decisions changed over the past years?
Yeah, thanks, Julia. I think that's a great question to start out with also, because I've been in sales for about 20 years in total, working both in retail and the past 15 years in B2B. And I think the biggest, most significant change is that the investment levels have where it requires the involvement of a CFO or a senior financial professional has gone down in ranges. So what was before a no-brainer for individual stakeholders that hold budget to sign off on now requires involvement from higher up. And this, of course, changes the pressure and the capabilities needed in individual sellers and sales teams, and makes the buying process and the sales process more complex.
It sure does. And I mean, that's something we can all notice in B2B right now. The sales cycles are longer. The buying committees are becoming bigger, and we're coming off a wave of companies just purchasing SaaS solutions, B2B solutions, and all of a sudden this is coming to a stop because companies are trying to cut costs. Yeah. Hiring is going down, and every company, of course, directed by the CFO is trying to lower the amount they actually spend, and especially the recurring costs they have on solutions. And with that, of course, trying to make the most out of the solutions.
Definitely.
But to dive a bit deeper into our research, of course, and this topic that we would like to introduce today. So our research was twofold. In the first place, we surveyed over 300 B2B sellers worldwide to hear how they are selling to the CFO, how confident they are feeling in selling to the CFO, and if they actually recognize the importance the CFO has in this day and time to close deals. And then the second part was, of course, talking to CFOs. So we interviewed 15 CFOs to hear what are actually the metrics they're looking at. What are their priorities for this year? What do they need to achieve? And put, of course, all of this together. So to dive a bit into the results, what do you see on the seller side? What are they saying about the role of the CFO?
Well, I thought it was really interesting, and it was both expected and not, that 67% of the respondents actually stated that they find that the CFO has gotten more decision making power over the last year, and what I did expect this definitely during 2022 when the global market kind of took a little bit of a halt. But even now in 2023, the notion of this is continuing. And I think this is even though the market is picking up again, companies are still being careful on the spend side. And they see it as an opportunity to tighten the control a little bit after many, many years of global, really good financial times. And this is a time to clean up. And then you see it immediately on the involvement of financial seniors.
Yes. So also what we saw from the CFOs and what they stated is that no matter if an investment has been budgeted or not, they are still involved in the decision. and they have the overruling power. So no matter if that is a solution for HR, sales, marketing, they have the power to say, yes, you might have thought we need Salesforce, but it is too expensive. We need to cut that down unless you can prove the case. Which of course brings us to the challenges sellers are faced with in selling to the CFO. What are some of the challenges that you see?
Well, definitely both in my own professional role as a salesperson, but and because even though I'm the CEO, I being involved in sales is always crucial. But also what we see from the respondents of the survey, not always knowing the metrics, having this person there in the background that you know is heavily influencing the decision, but not knowing what they measure on, what are their KPIs, what's important to them, how informed are they from your champions and stakeholders, makes it very difficult. It is a true challenge and an art to master. And it's not always what we do find also from the survey results is that it's not always that the sellers feel well equipped and supported from their organization.
Yeah, and I think one thing that pops to your mind straight away when you think I need to like convince the CFO is of course RI. I mean, they're the CFO. All they care about is RI. And while our research supports that, of course, RI plays a big role. So both from the sellers, but also from the CFOs, of course, they pointed out that profitability is one of their biggest things they need to ensure and their biggest priorities. It is more difficult than that. Because of course, the priority of the RI has increased. So now they want to see a way higher, way faster RI percentage because they know that is what they need to you know, get the investment back. And then it's like a good investment. But at the same time, there are way more factors in play, such as, does this actually support long-term growth? Exactly. Does this fit to the business strategy? So all of this is also difficult because, of course, I imagine in the sales process as a seller, it is very difficult to get access to this kind of information.
Definitely. And not only that, but it's the short-term, long-term strategy, it's legal requirements. Often different companies have different legal requirements. It's how does it fit in with other tools and other purchasing decisions? How is the timing? So it becomes a very complex environment, regardless if you want it or not. I think that's the biggest challenge, and I think they're one of the things that's really important to take to you from as early on as possible in your career as a professional salesperson, is to not be afraid of asking straight out. I think and we're not. I think today sales training is evolving to actually incorporate this a lot more. But I know when I started out a long time ago now, this wasn't something that was focused on so much. So dealing with all your stakeholders and especially this one is becoming more clear. And I think this research that we've done now can really help making that, bringing that forward also and equipping sales professionals out there with the tools and also the knowledge to go to their managers and say, hey, this is what I'm experiencing. And can we work together to create the right tools for me?
Yeah, and I mean, that is kind of the only way forward and also why we launched this report to really help organizations change the way they do B2B sales because a lot of the old ways aren't enough anymore. But I think you brought out another very interesting point, and that is, of course, asking the questions straight out. But who do you ask these questions to? Because I mean, in the solutions that sell to us, our finance department isn't involved. So I imagine that sellers don't have direct access to actually the financial decision makers. I mean, when I hear CFO, I think they are busy. They don't want to sit in sales calls. I mean, I often don't want to sit in sales
calls. Definitely not.
What do you advise there?
So basically, first of all, you need to do your discovery, right? And you need to figure out, is this a solution that's all fit their needs? And how can my solution fit this customer's needs? Once you have that established, then making sure that your buyer has the internal knowledge of who will sign off on it. I think that's the first step. Because to be honest, oftentimes today, you even encounter buyers that are unaware of their own internal infrastructure. And where you as a salesperson almost need to take an educational role in teaching them how they should proceed inside their organization. Once you've established interest, once you've established a match, then start mapping out for yourself, who's making the decision, who's signing off on this, and how can I help you as my champion, you who want my solution to make this happen? What kind of information do you need in order to proceed to your manager or your manager's manager? It's a person who has never seen a demo, has never seen what it is that you're trying to sell, and they will never see it. Most likely, they will never even use it. But they are the ones spending the money on it. So they need to see the value in more facets than just a demo or even an ROI. So yes, they need to see the ROI clearly, but they also need to see how does it fit into our tech landscape? What are the risks? How do we mitigate the risks? And yes, how do we get a return on this investment?
Yes, and so, you know, I mean, of course, also from the marketing perspective there, a lot of this for me screams sales collateral. So what kind of sales materials do sellers actually need to have access to guide this effectively? Because of course, I mean, there are a lot of great sellers out there, some of whom we have the pleasure of working with at Presenter, that are also very driven and, you know, want to go out and create their own content, which from the marketing point of view, I'm not the biggest fan of, as you know.
Yes.
So it is also, again, this joint exercise of sales and marketing working together to create these kind of assets that are available and that fit to everything that marketing and product marketing is working on in regards to value propositions and benefits and user personas.
Yeah, you're so right. And it really comes down to collaboration. Also because sales reps today, from a sales perspective, you have some quite sharp KPIs. You have budgets that you need to reach. A lot of companies have downscaled in the sales department over the last year, so fewer people need to run faster. And at the same time as demands from the buyer side have just increased and everyone expects the personalized experience and they want you to speak to them and they don't want general generic cases and all those things. So it's like a really imbalanced situation that we have. And there's a lot you can do by working, like you say, effectively and align between sales and marketing internally, creating as much content as possible that is generic in terms of everything that's standardized and provide easy, clear communication around your legal, around your product, around value proposition, and then having certain assets that are easily customizable. So that you, in sales, you're always on brand, you're always on messaging when it comes to certain assets. And then you have others where you can customize and where there is flexibility to put in the numbers of your specific customer and build their business case, because that is incredibly important. Nobody today wants to see how a different company with a different setup is getting value from your solution. They want to see how they can get value from your solution. Otherwise, it's a little bit like comparing apples to pears.
Absolutely, and I think RI is a big point there. I mean, you know, RI calculators are of course very effective if done right, and I see this like, you know, if you don't already have an RI calculator or you don't have an RI formula mapped out for your solution, and you know, just on the legal side, I know that a lot of companies struggle a little bit with it because, of course, it is kind of like making promises. Mm-hmm. So yes, your data needs to be very well funded and credible to use it and to actually create a proper formula. But creating such a formula and an RI for your solution for me is very much a joint task and should be a joint task, not only between sales and marketing, but also product, the finance department, to really map this out, because the only way that RI actually is realistic is by taking a lot of different factors into consideration and not just saying this one benefit and this one cost, but actually also what are the factors that go into achieving this benefit and achieving this RI. And I mean, these are a lot of factors. It is adoption rate, it is training, it's all sorts of factors, of course specific also to the solution you're selling. But I think by being able to map these factors out and again addressing them transparently and saying, and this is how we help you achieve this. We help you achieve a high adoption rate because we have a fantastic customer success team. You get a customer success manager that will train the team in this and this and this is the onboarding plan. Is the only way that actually the RI is going to be taken into consideration by the CFO. And obviously the CFO sees a lot of RI numbers and a lot of financial metrics. So they know what they're looking at straight away. But another thing I wanted to say on this part and how marketing can help this process. I mean, you know, this day and time, we all love customer cases, customer testimonials. But I do think in selling to the CFO, this is a massive untapped potential to actually get financial testimonials. So no matter in what industry and what department your solution is for, actually talking to your customer's CFO or financial decision maker and getting a statement from them, I think, is something that marketing can support and, of course, customer success. That is incredibly valuable because, I mean, as a marketer, I trust other marketers, right? So I would just assume it is the same for a CFO. They trust other CFOs, and understanding how the CFO of one of your customers made that decision to purchase can be really, really helpful.
I definitely agree. And to a certain extent, I don't disagree. But I think what's really important for the CFO is to see how the solution is living and creating value for the main stakeholders in the other organization or in a case organization. So if the main stakeholder is a sales director, then getting the testimonials and the financial return from him or her is the most important. And then if you can involve the CFO in a customer organization, I think that's fantastic, but it's not crucial. Also because the metrics in different organizations differ depending on where they are in their story, in their journey and or organizational size and so on. And I think one important thing that you mentioned earlier is mapping out the metrics that you should have in mind today, which adds complexity at the same time as it doesn't. I think just by creating an RI formula or an impact formula for yourself is already placing you one step ahead of the game, because then you're one step farther than everyone who doesn't have that. But credibility is incredibly important. I've received in a role as a purchaser, I've received numerous ROI calculations from vendors that just haven't been credible. And then it's like, okay, it's a nice try, but you know, it just doesn't work. So then it actually removes credibility from them. So if you don't have it like rock solid, don't use it. Then play on other things instead. You can still build your business case even if you don't have one. But if you do have one, you are one step ahead of your competition.
Yes, I agree, of course. We also talked about some of these challenges that sellers face in selling to the CFO and actually guiding this process effectively. So what are some of the tactics you would advise sellers to use to guide this process and, you know, at the end of the day, close the deal, hit their quota, and have a good month, a good quarter, a good year 2023, which is what we all are dreaming of.
Yeah, we're all dreaming of that. I know everyone out there are really fighting for it and working hard. I think I'll loop back a little bit to what I said in the beginning of daring, because it's one of the mistakes I really made when I was a less experienced seller, of not daring to be direct and asking what you could call the tough questions. Are you making the decision on this? Who else do we need to involve? What do they need? And if they don't know, it sucks. But if they don't know, it's actually a sign that the likelihood, the probability of your opportunity is decreasing. Because then it's likely, it's not necessarily the case, but it's likely that they don't have the mandate to push this at all. Because if you're in a position to make a decision, or if you have been tasked by someone higher up to find the right solution, you know who to involve and how to involve them. And if they might not know what they need in order to make a decision, but they will know what to ask. And as soon as you know that, then make that person your best friend and figure out how you can support them. You come, make them shine, make them look smart, and say, this is what I usually provide my buyers with. Would this help you in building your case internally? So be more than just the salesperson. Be the advisor that helps your champion make a decision internally and make them shine.
That sounds great, but exhausting. So again, I'm very happy I'm not in sales.
It is.
But, you know, again, talking about how marketing can support this this process, I think, you know, the sales enablement aspect, or having like internal training materials, is really important.
Yeah.
So of course, like including the CFO as a buyer persona, or at least as a decision maker, and having templates and guidance for sellers on that. So what are the things they're looking out for? What are their ways of thinking? I mean, obviously CFOs are very rational people. They're very risk averse. So they, of course, think straight away of what are the risks that are attached to any spending, because nobody wants to go into risk in this year. No. Nobody can afford it. But at the same time, of course, they are incredibly busy. So just being aware of what is kind of their workload, and considering that end of month, end of quarter, end of year is a time where CFOs and financial decision makers are incredibly busy. So it's not a great time to reach out to them and try to write an email to your buyer CFO.
No.
But the other part is, of course, on top of just creating internal materials from the marketing side, I think it's also, at least for strategic accounts and these enterprise accounts you want to win, to target CFOs or financial decision makers in marketing with your ads and your campaigns, of course, focused on business impact and financial metrics and these kind of things, or as you said, customer statements that really prove the financial case of your solution, but to get them on board early on. So actually sellers don't stand alone with this task on top of all of the other tasks they already have.
Definitely. And also, and I think from a marketing perspective, I think that's a really smart thing to do. Because then even though the CFO or the finance director is not the one who will use your tool, then you've planted the seed and awareness around your product or solution, so that when it ends on their table, it's not they feel some kind of familiarity with it. Maybe they've seen something, they've read something from you, and that makes the decision that tiny bit easier. And I guess to all of the sales managers and sales directors out there listening to this, it's really, even though you might not be so involved in the sales process now as you've been in the past when you were on the floor, so to speak, be your team's champion in internally in your organization, and align with marketing proactively, go to the different departments requesting the material that might be missing, so that the frontline people can really increase their productivity and not spend time or feel insecure in that I might not have the material that I need or I can't create it. So it is really a team effort. And looping back to what we talked about in the beginning of what has changed, I think this is really a significant change. Because in the past, salespeople could be like lone wolves and you would manage it on your own. It's not possible today. It is a team effort, and everyone needs to bring their part to the table in order to win the customer, regardless if you're selling a machine or a piece of software. And then you also need the tools in order to push that collateral out effectively. Otherwise, it's going to be a mess.
Yes, and I mean the messy part, been there, done that. So of course I'm very happy, and I know we agree on this, because of course at Procento we do work a lot on the sales and marketing alignment, and in general the alignment of all teams. I have said it on this podcast before, but my favorite meeting of the week is our forecasting meeting, where we're doing exactly what you just pointed out, and we are aligning on these things, but also on, you know, seeing, okay, what is our sales team missing? And if they have an opportunity and they are struggling with pushing that forward, that is the kind of meeting where they bring up, well, actually, I need this or that asset. I'm missing that. And that is something people are requesting. And then, of course, me and my team working on that. So yeah, it's of course, it's very fun to talk to you about it, because it's such a topic that we live out as well at Procentor.
we do. I mean, it's close to our hearts. Let's face it. But it's also because there is a real change and real need that and our past experiences of things being dysfunctional, that we are on this mission to change it and help both sales and marketing out there. And I love that you mention our forecast meetings, because what I think is really cool that we do is that we involve, so marketing is there, customer success is there, sales is there, and together then it's so easy for customer success to partly be involved early on in what's coming in, but they can also so quickly say, hey, we have a customer that had a similar experience or a similar setup. Why don't I talk to them and see if they can provide some support? So even if you're a bigger organization, you don't need to do it every week. You don't need to do it, down in detail. But having these cross-functional meetings Definitely increases your ability to create the right content and align across departments and basically increases your probability of hitting your quota.
Yes, absolutely. A last point, kind of leading back to the CFO topic, I want to make. I'm reading this over and over again on LinkedIn, and it of course is also part of that process of winning over the CFO, proving the necessity of your solution, and that is something that we have discussed at work as well. Because necessity is such a big factor, right? Nobody is going to spend money in this current situation on something that isn't absolutely necessary. So what are your tips on how you can prove the necessity of your solution for the buyer?
It's such a good question. And it's really one of the most challenging things that I think everybody's facing at the moment. Because like you say, what is a necessity? It depends on how you look at it. But I think in this case, it's not only, you shouldn't only look at ROI, but you should also look at what is the cost that the buyer would face by not doing this. So they're like status quo is a risk in itself. And if you address that, then you create a sense of urgency. So that's easier said than done. And I think that's something that many are struggling with, especially in uncertain times when companies by default go back to status quo is safe. Let's stay there for now until we weather the storm. But status quo is a risk. So I think addressing that and finding ways together with your revenue team to find the risks by not buying your solution can help push the deals. And that's also something that can get the CFO to go from nah, we're holding off on this to okay, this is something that we need to do now.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I would just challenge kind of the pointing out the risks involved in not acting. I think I would rather focus on what you're losing out on. So the potential, the untapped potential that you're missing if you keep with the status quo. And of course, that all translates back into revenue generation and sales, right? If you can prove this is the impact this is going to have on your revenue generation, and this is how much we can increase that, I think that is a really strong point. I'm also just saying that with the risk because, and that is maybe more a marketing point of view and like in communication. But last year I attended a LinkedIn session on exactly these points. And one thing they found based on a study that they did is that this kind of fear of missing out communication actually isn't working well, at least on the ads part and what they see on the platform. The only industry where it's effective is IT security. but for all other parts and all other industries, it's actually communication that they didn't see being impactful.
That's very interesting. Would you think it's more about choosing when to use that tactic?
That is why I'm saying it might be more a marketing point of view, because of course it's very different to have an ad that says, I don't know, you could be losing $50,000 versus a seller bringing that up in the sales process, right? And saying, by the way, this is what we have seen with customers like happening, or this is what customers have reported. It's a very different communication and a very different context to bring this up in. So this might be very impactful in sales. I'm just pointing out that in marketing, based on the information I've received, it is not as impactful.
And I think that's a super interesting point to make, because I do believe it. And I think when phrased that way, I think it makes so much sense, because when you're further along in the dialogue with your buyer, it can really be what pushes them over the edge and helps them make a decision now versus later by making these arguments quite skillfully and at the right time. From experience, it can have a massive impact.
Also, given, of course, that you as a seller have had the opportunity to become more of a trusted advisor rather than, you know, the buyer seeing them as I often see sellers as like, okay, this is just a salesperson that is just trying to, you know, get something done, but actually somebody that can challenge the buyer and that gives good advice that really can help them get rid of some of their pain points and some of the things they're struggling with.
Yeah. And I think here I have, so my, I think my heart pounds for the more junior salespeople out there. And because it is, I know how difficult it is to be the trusted advisor when you feel like you don't have that much experience yet. And I think here the alignment and collaboration between departments becomes even more important. And I think there is so much untapped potential in junior reps by using the right tools and pushing material out so regardless of what situation you stand in as a junior rep, you know you have this kind of safety net of content that's relevant for your buyer. And you're vulnerable as a junior rep anyway, because like, how do I speak to a CFO? I have no idea. I'm 27 years old. I've never met a CFO, and still I need to cater to their needs. And this is where alignment across organizations, a revenue team is so crucial. As a more senior and a highly experienced sales professional, you've learned how to maneuver. You still need all this support, and you will definitely have a higher conversion rate if you do, but you can be the trusted advisor without using too much effort. But yeah, and when it comes to hitting quotas and as a team performance, then you can't live without the right content these days.
Yes, and I mean, you know, music in my marketing ears, but to finish this off, lots of love and respect to sellers out there, junior or senior. It is a tough job, and even though I'm in marketing, I know that, and I know I couldn't do it. I rather like to hide behind the content.
No, I think the respect goes right back to marketing, at least for those who are aware of how marketing is working. I've seen both sides, so to speak, and I know it's not always that sales and marketing align that well, but it's really difficult to create the right content when you are not in these daily situations together with buyers. It's like fumbling in the dark. So I have huge respect for all the marketers out there that are trying to satisfy sales and trying so hard to deliver the right content that fits every situation, and then having sellers loop back and say, hey, can you fix this? Can you do this? Blah, 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 blah. It's a struggle, but it's a fun struggle. That we all enjoy taking step by step going forward.
Yes, and just on that note, a little anecdote from Presenter as well. We recently moved offices, and now I'm sitting much closer to sales, which actually means that I get to overhear demos and meetings our sales team has. And I've just said it this week, but I love it so much because I actually hear what questions come up, which, you know, of course gives me a very different idea of both what are the considerations they're having, but also, of course, and what does our communication need to be, what content might be missing. And that, of course, gives me also the chance to be more proactive about it and address this and ask our sellers proactively, like, hey, I heard this come up. Is that maybe something we should do? Or already make up an idea of, okay, what topic does this fit into and what format should this be in? Do we need like a one pager? Should this just be a blog post? What, or a video, or, you know, whatever it could be. The options are massive these days. So yeah, I really like that's a big part. So I can also only advise to any marketers, really get involved there. And, you know, ask to join demos or sales meetings once in a while, because it gives you really unique insights. And of course, it takes time away. But I'm in a lucky position that I kind of get to sit on my desk and work and overhear this. So it's a it's a two birds with one stone.
Definitely. And I think for those in maybe bigger organizations where it's maybe a longer physical distance, but also mental distance, asking as a manager, as a marketing director and sales director, as on a management level, kind of cahooting and getting your people to getting the marketers to shadow a sales rep throughout an entire sales process. Because it's one thing to only listen in on an initial demo or sales meeting, but maneuvering in the back and forths that are in a sales process can give so much insights of what is needed, where and when and why, and give marketing ideas to what kind of content do we need that sales would never think of, because sales is not, that's not their core competence. They just think of, okay, what's the next step in the sales process? Whereas as the different mindset can really help complement. So yeah, shadowing each other more is a way of moving forward quite quickly.
Yes. And that's what we're doing. So I'm looking forward to tomorrow's forecasting meeting.
Yay!
And to just end this, of course, with a little bit of a promo corner. We talked a bit about some of the insights in our Why the CFO Matters report, but we're leaving the link here, and there are lots of things to dive into. So if you want to check it out, please do so. There is, you know, all sorts of content on both understanding the CFO, but also, of course, on what the sellers said in the survey. So feel free to dive into that to become stronger in your marketing and sales game and have a good 2023. And thanks so much for joining, Sarah. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for having me, Julia. It was really fun to be in on this. And to everyone out there also jumping into the content, there's lots of great templates and quite hands-on guides in how to set up your material to succeed and build your business cases. So don't be shy to dig into that either.
And with that, thanks for today.
Thank you.